Do you remember the day, December 7th, 1941?
Oh, yeah.
You would have been 11 years old?
Yes, that's right.
Tell us about that day.
Well, we had the cousin that was based at Pearl Harbor, so we were worried about him. We didn't know for two or three days whether or not he had been injured or anything in the attack on Pearl Harbor. He was fine. He lasted through the war. In fact, when I went to Korea, he was over there in Korea, so we had lunch a couple of times together and talked about old times.
December 7th, 41, do you remember, how did you first hear the...
It was word of mouth, I think. But I do know that the following day in school, it was really interesting because Roosevelt made a speech. We had radios in the classroom, so we heard Roosevelt's speech.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate, of the House of Representatives, yesterday, December 7, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Indeed, 1 hour after Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu, the Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleague delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. And while this reply stated that it seemed useless to continue the existing diplomatic negotiations, it contained no threat or hint of war or of armed attack. It will be recorded that the distance of Hawaii from Japan makes it obvious that the attack was deliberately planned many days or even weeks ago. During the intervening time, the Japanese government has deliberately sought to deceive the United States by false statements and expressions of hope for continued peace. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu. Yesterday, the Japanese government also launched an attack against Malaya. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Hong Kong. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Guam. Last night, Japanese forces attacked the Philippine Islands. Last night, the Japanese attacked Wake Island. And this morning, the Japanese attacked Midway Island. Japan has therefore undertaken a surprise offensive extending throughout the Pacific area. The facts of yesterday and today speak for themselves. People of the United States have already formed their opinions and well understand the implications to the very life and safety of our nation. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense. But always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. I believe that I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
And then they were talking about how much money it was going to cost to fight a war. They started talking about millions of dollars and then billions of dollars, and I couldn't relate to that figure at all.
And, of course, December 7th was on a Sunday, and so then it would have been on Monday that you heard that radio broadcast
right.
in school.
But anyway, everybody was pitching in. I was still picking up scrap iron when we moved to Tulsa. Because at Grover Cleveland Junior High School, we had a pile. What they did is they gave us 3 days to go out and scrounge and get metal. Scrap metal is what they were wanting. They had a picture of the Tulsa World on the front page of this big pile of scrap metal.
That students at Cleveland?
Yes, Cleveland Junior High School.
Had collected. And where would you collect scrap metal? Where would you find it?
Well, what we did is we would look in ditches. Sometimes we would find somebody that actually had made a stash and wanted to get rid of it. We had wagons, little toy wagons that we used to pull this stuff around in because it's heavy. It makes you tired real quick.
So the metal would be parts to...
agricultural equipment. Now those are collector's items. Agricultural equipment that was worn out. That was perfectly good scrap iron.
When did you move to Tulsa?
It was in 1942.
So in 42, you lived in Tulsa, and your first school was Cleveland Junior High.
Yeah.
What were the other schools you attended in Tulsa?
It's the only school I attended in Tulsa because Dad took a job out at Keystone. He was a basketball coach and softball coach and so forth, and taught.
Did you make model airplanes?
Oh, yeah. I made model airplanes. We'd keep patching them up. That was great sport.
Many of those kids, of course, just did it as a hobby then. I mean, for you, it was a bigger deal than that, I suppose. It obviously went on to bigger things. Then your family moves in 43 to Keystone, and that was the town of Keystone because your father became...
He was a teacher and a coach. He coached softball and basketball. We didn't have football.
Were you an athlete, too?
Not really. I liked to play basketball.
How long did you live in Keystone?
1 year. And then we moved into Sand Springs.
And we should mention that Keystone was covered up with water, right?
40 feet of water.
Tell us about that, what that was about.
Well, they got ready to build a Keystone Dam. They figured out where they would put the dam. And then behind it, it would be about 40 feet deep. They condemned all the property and bought the houses from the people. And if they wanted to, they could tear them down and move them because they were not going to do anything with those houses. Some people did that. It was the talk of the town, you know, when they condemned the places and condemned an entire area, actually. But the people made out fairly well after that.
Was there controversy or people arguing and fighting about it?
No.
They just knew that this was a good thing to do.
Yeah.
Remember seeing it built?
Yes, from a distance.